Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We begin with the bombshell dropped on Wall Street today in the form of an op-ed in the New York Times by a former Goldman Sachs executive who wrote, "Why I am leaving Goldman Sachs," accusing the company of being morally bankrupt with a working environment now as toxic and destructive as ever. William Cohen, a contributing editor to Fortune and author of Money and Power, How Goldman Sachs Came to Rule the World, joins us. Then we'll examine how super PACs are determining who will run for the presidency in this election and likely who will be the next president. Ari Berman, a contributing writer to The Nation and an investigative journalism fellow at The Nation Institute, joins us to discuss the overwhelming influence of super PACs on our already money-driven electoral system and how a handful of billionaires will determine the political fate of the nation. Then finally, British humorist Martin Lewis joins us to take a wry look at the current visit of UK Prime Minister David Cameron to the White House at a convenient time for Cameron when back home his friend and neighbour Rebecca Brooks, the former head of Rupert Murdoch's British media empire, is being arrested along with five others for conspiring to pervert the course of justice. And again, I'd like to invite you to join me tomorrow night, Thursday, March the 15th at 7 p.m. for UCLA Hammer Forum. I'm moderating Buying Votes with Lawrence Lessig, the director of the Center for Ethics at Harvard University and author of Republic Lost, How Money Corrupts Congress and a Plan to Stop It. Again, tomorrow night, March the 15th, 7 p.m., free and open to the public. Join me at the UCLA Hammer Forum. Joining us now is William Cohen, a contributing editor at Fortune and a writer for Vanity Fair and the New York Times, who covers a variety of financial issues. He began his career as an investigative reporter in Raleigh, North Carolina, and then went on to work on Wall Street for over a decade and a half, both at Lazare Fred and J.P. Morgan Chase. He's the author of House of Cards, A Tale of Hubris and Wretched Excess on Wall Street, The Last Tycoons, The Secret History of Lazare Fred and Company, and his latest book, Money and Power, How Goldman Sachs Came to Rule the World. Welcome to Background Briefing, William Cohen.
Thank you, Ian. Nice to be here.
And Goldman Sachs, your latest book, Money and Power, How Goldman Sachs Came to Rule the World, they sure got a black eye today from the head of their branch in London, Greg Smith, has an op-ed in today's New York Times. You're there on Wall Street, Bill. I bet you there's quite a lot of people that read that op-ed.
There's no bigger story in Manhattan today than this op-ed in the New York Times about Greg Smith's op-ed about Goldman Sachs. There's no question about that.
And what kind of impact do you think it'll have? You know, it really gets to the heart of what he says is wrong. He said that it may be a surprise to people, but there is such a thing as a culture in both on Wall Street and in a company. And now he's saying that I can honestly say that the environment at Goldman Sachs is as toxic and destructive as I've ever seen it.
Well, look, as you and I have talked about before, Goldman Sachs has been in and out of trouble its whole existence. There are numerous instances that I recount in the book of how it's put its interests before its clients. So I don't know why particularly Greg Smith is just waking up to this today. I mean, this has been an ongoing problem at Goldman Sachs. I'm sure there's a lot of teeth gnashing down at the firm today because I think, frankly, after a period of extremely bad publicity from, you know, the beginning of 2009 through much of 2011, I think, you know, they were sort of hoping to have put this behind them. And unfortunately, this raises the whole specter of the vampire squid again in a way that is, you know, completely not flattering for the firm. But as far as the content of what he wrote about, that has been something that has been on the minds of people for a long time, both inside and outside the firm. And as you know, you'll remember from Senator Levin's hearing in April 2010, this is very much what Senator Levin was talking about for 11 hours on that spring day. So, again, while, I mean, the worst part of this from Goldman's perspective is this is something they thought they had put behind them in the last year.
Well, Greg Smith, he apparently advised two of the largest hedge funds on the planet, five of the largest asset managers in the U.S., and three of the most prominent sovereign wealth funds. And his clients had a total asset base of more than $1 trillion. It sounds like he could go into business on his own.
I'm not sure what he can do, Ian. I don't think he can work on Wall Street anymore. This is the kind of, you know, while it's very raw and honest, and many people appreciate his honesty. This is the kind of thing that they hate on Wall Street, and clients hate this too because, you know, they expect their bankers or their traders or whoever it is they're working with to be able to keep their confidence and not, you know, go blabbing to the press about what happens or things that they don't like about what happens. And clearly that's not the case here. And unless he's got some really special skills that none of us know about. I mean, the truth of the matter is that people think they do a really good job and are really good at their job when they've got a Goldman Sachs jersey on. They take that jersey off, and unless they're an incredibly talented hedge fund manager or derivatives trader or whatever it is, he might find that he has a very, very difficult time getting a new job. And, you know, clients and employers don't like when their employees, tell air the dirty linen of Wall Street on the op-ed page of the New York Times. That's why this has caused a storm, because it's such a rare occurrence. And it's never happened, as far as I can tell, in the history of Goldman Sachs. And so this is not something that's going to make him very popular. I mean, if he's got a rare skill and a rare talent, then he's going to be fine. But I suspect he doesn't. He's just a vice president, a mid-level employee who lost his job, and I'm sure he's not happy about it. And out of frustration, he wrote this article. And it's very interesting to read, and it's refreshing to read, and it needed probably to be written. But it's not going to mean he's going to be – nobody's going to really hurry to hire this guy, in my estimation.
Well, did he lose his job, or did he quit?
Well, you know, there's a fine line. Honestly, Ian, nobody quits their job on Wall Street in his position. Look, I don't know the guy and I don't know the details, but it would be a rare person indeed who quit his job in March of a new year. I'm sure there's more to it than I know about, but, either he didn't get a good bonus that he liked or he wasn't happy in his job. He may have quit, or he may have been told, you might as well start looking around. Obviously, he didn't sign any of the documents that usually they have to sign to tie these people up in knots so they don't do things like this. So there's obviously more to the story than we know, and we don't know whether he quit or whether he, was fired.
Again, I'm speaking with William Cohen, contributing editor at Fortune and a writer for Vanity Fair and the New York Times. He's the author of Money and Power, How Goldman Sachs Came to Rule the World. Well, the message, though, that Goldman Sachs, and we've heard this before, as you mentioned in Senate 11's hearings, with the this, I can't repeat the word that he kept repeating so often,
right.
That they gave their clients such blank deals. That's his message is basically the same, that they care more right. about making money off their clients than they making money for their clients.
That's unfortunately that's the reality of life at Goldman Sachs, and that's the way it's been. I could give you examples going back to the Depression. I could give you examples to 1970. I could give you examples to 2006 and 1993 and 1994. I can give you a lot of examples, Ian. This has been going on a long time at Goldman Sachs. One would have thought there would have been some reform after this financial crisis. But if you read, say, Judge Leo Strine's incredible opinion from February 29th, where he talks about this El Paso Kinder Morgan deal, you'll see that's filled with Goldman's bad behavior. And once again, you see Greg Smith talking about it. So, this is something that got a lot of attention today, but this has been going on for a long time. Senator Levin's been talking about it. The SEC's been talking about it. This is a real problem for Goldman Sachs, and unless they fix this, they're not going to be in business very long because, they don't have anything but their reputation. And if they keep messing up their reputation, clients aren't going to want to do business with them.
Well, you'd think they would have got the message last time, and if they don't get the message from Greg Smith's op-ed, you wonder why they put their money, give their money away to these people whose priority is to make money for themselves, not for their clients, it would seem. But there's also this you mentioned that you can't rock the boat. Lloyd Blankfein and all of these guys are kind of the princes of Wall Street. Look what happened with MF Global. What, $1.5 billion is still missing, and the guy's not going to go to jail. And I mean, it's amazing.
Ian. I mean, this is a long-term problem. I mean, nobody's been held accountable for what's happened on Wall Street. You and I have discussed this before. It's despicable. It continues to be unconscionable that no one's been held accountable for this. If you're a client of Goldman Sachs, this is not a good day. If you're Goldman Sachs, this is not a good day. But the truth is, Bear Stearns is gone, Lehman Brothers gone, Merrill Lynch is not what it was. Morgan Stanley is not what it was. There are very few options for clients these days if you want to do the kind of business that you can do with Goldman Sachs. And so, you know, they have very few choices at this point in time. And so until that, new firms come along who are willing to do the kinds of things that Goldman will do for their clients, then clients are not going to have much choice, and they're going to have to put up with this. And that's what you're seeing right now. I mean, I had a lot of people who talked to me, in the writing of this book, clients who told me many of these same things that Greg Smith wrote about. They did it anonymously because they're so afraid of Goldman Sachs and not being able to do business with them anymore. But they wanted people to know that this is going on, and it's not a good thing. And, you know, until Goldman Sachs solves this, then they're going to have a lot of angry clients on their hands, and frankly, a lot of, you know, frustrated employees who think they're working hard and doing a good job, and then this is the kind of public image that people have of them, and it's not anything to be desired.
Well, what do you think is going on Wall Street in general? William Cohen, again, the author of Money and Power, How Goldman Sachs Came to Rule the World. Mitt Romney, who lost two primaries last night in Mississippi and Alabama, was on Wall Street at a big fundraiser. The Obama campaign is now saying that the Koch brothers and others are going to be running hundreds of millions of dollars super PACs against them, and that they're concerned that there's not a level playing field even for Obama, who's proven to be a great fundraiser, and the money's apparently not coming in like it is for the Republicans. Is Wall Street pivoting to Romney?
Oh, I think Wall Street has been firmly in Romney's camp for a long time. I mean, there are a few sort of diehard Democrats on Wall Street who will continue to support President Obama, but I think that by and large, the majority of people on Wall Street have been fed up with Obama for some time and have been supporting Mitt Romney quite extensively. And I don't really see that changing. And I don't think there's much that Obama can do against that at this point, even though he's had fundraisers on Wall Street. But he is not in a position at the moment to come back to Wall Street and expect to get a lot of money.
Well, given how much Wall Street is driving up the price of gasoline, I spoke to an oil and gas analyst who's considered to be one of the leading experts on this subject, Fidel Guite. I spoke with him yesterday at Oppenheimer & Company, and he said that at least a third of the price of gasoline is due to the gaming on Wall Street, the speculation, which is done through what's called the Goldman Sachs Index. And Goldman Sachs and these big banks are pushing the price up, along with the hedge fund managers and the pension funds whose money it is, that are making these bets, and that this is all about greed. It's about, you know, basically a bunch of people finding a way to make money for themselves at the expense of the rest of us who have to drive the car to work, and some people have to make a choice between food on the table and gas in the tank. It's an outrageous situation. I'm just trying to wonder here whether there's a connection. If Wall Street's gaming the price of oil, the CBS New York Times poll that came out yesterday said that Obama's approval is an all-time low because of the price of gas and the perception that he's not doing anything about it. If Wall Street's backing Romney, and if the best thing that the Republicans have got going for them is the high price of gas, is there a connection there?
So, I mean, I think that it's tempting. I mean, that's an interesting sort of conspiracy theory, but I really don't see how oil traders would be driving up the price of oil and gasoline in order to help get Romney elected, because I just don't see how that's likely to happen, although it's hurting Obama's approval rating. You know, we've got a long time to go before the election, and I just don't think high oil prices alone are going to be the reason. If Obama doesn't get reelected, it's not going to be because of high oil prices, high gas prices.
Well, I guess another way to look at it is the traders are only interested in making money, right?
Right, exactly. I mean, and they'll trade the oil futures when they're up and when they're down, and that's what they care about, making money first and foremost. They care less about whether it's Romney in the White House or Obama in the White House.
But there are certain things that a candidate can promise them, like we will make sure the Commodities and Futures Trading Commission do absolutely nothing. We will gut Dodd-Frank and neuter the new Consumer Financial Protection Agency, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes, and clearly Romney has promised that, and they're very happy about that. That's probably why they support him. But, you know, candidates say a lot of things when they're trying to get elected, and then, you know, once they're in the White House, you know, we see what, I mean, Obama was going to be the candidate of change, remember? I mean, you know, change that we can believe in. And he got to the White House and, you know, more things stayed the same than they then have changed. And, you know, the reality, presidents are confronted with realities all the time once they get off the campaign trail. So, I mean, I think Romney's in a position now where he'll say anything to get elected. And he's obviously got the support of Wall Street, but I don't think, you know, high gas prices alone and traders aren't driving up the price of gas, the oil and oil, because they want to see Romney elected. I mean, we've got a lot of things going on here with, you know, Iran and demand and, you know, speculation that are driving the price of oil higher, not because they want Romney to be elected.
Well, no, I think you've definitely shot down my conspiracy theory, Will. But I still think, though, that the fact that the press is not talking about it very much and that they're coming up with all kinds of ridiculous excuses for the price of gas and that the politicians aren't speaking up about it, except for Bernie Sanders, not a peep out of any of them, I think you can make the case that there's nothing more powerful than the Wall Street banking lobby, and there's probably no lobby that has a great attraction on Capitol Hill than the Wall Street banking lobby, right?
I think you'd be, I mean, except for maybe the healthcare lobby, I think you're probably absolutely right. I mean, Wall Street has been working its magic in Washington for generations, and it continues to on both sides of the aisle. I mean, I'm sure Goldman Sachs is one of the biggest donors to Mitt Romney. I'm sure they're one of the biggest donors to President Obama. I mean, they hedge their bets, you know, in their own portfolio as they do, you know, in Washington. And so I think, you know, they're going to continue to get their pound of flesh out of Washington, and it's not going to really cost them all that much money to do so.
Well, all you have to do is mention Hank Paulson, Robert Rubin, John Corzine.
You know, Bob Zoellick, head of the World Bank. I mean, you can go on and on and on.
Right.
Mario Draghi, Mario Monti.
And so it goes. Well, Bill, I thank you so much for joining us here today to fill us in on this, the scandal of the day on Wall Street and in Manhattan. And you're pretty much suggesting it's going to be pretty ephemeral and they'll be back to business in the blink of an eye.
Unfortunately, I think you're absolutely right, Ian.
Well, I thank you again for joining us.
My pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with William Cohan, contributing editor at Fortune and a writer for Vanity Fair, The New York Times. He covers a variety of financial issues and began his career as an investigative reporter in Raleigh, North Carolina, and went on to work on Wall Street for over a decade and a half, both at Lazare Frere and J.P. Morgan Chase. He's the author of House of Cards, A Tale of Hubris and Wretched Excess on Wall Street, The Last Tycoons, The Secret History of Lazare Frere and Company, and his latest book, Money and Power, How Goldman Sachs Came to Rule the World. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about the extraordinary influence of super PACs over this election.
It's time to get away. It's time to get away from you. It's time to get away. It's time to get away from you. You bought a lot of money.